Okay, so I just recorded what is about to be what you're listening to. But before I get to that, I want to preface it by saying that eventually I'd like to basically give this same information, but with somebody else in conversation with me. Maybe that'll be Lenny. Maybe that'll be Molly. Maybe that'll be my friend Pete. I think that it's probably more interesting to listen to like a dialogue, and where somebody can, you know, jump in and ask me a question, ask for clarification, all of that, because so much of this stuff has become sort of second nature to me. Not all of it, obviously, but so I realize that probably listening to this stuff, you might need it. It would be probably more helpful to have somebody who is kind of pushing back on what I'm saying and asking for clarification, and it's probably more enjoyable to listen to two people talk than just one person give an endless monologue. But this is, I guess, I recorded this partly for my own, like, I just got to get this out there. And maybe also it will be like a more distilled version that you could come back to at certain parts and go, okay, like this is kind of compact and hopefully has good content to it. So anyways, here's what I recorded. Hey everybody, this is Tyler, and today on the show, I thought I would just share my understanding, a current understanding, of what I would say is sort of some of the movements, or maybe the movement of thought that is kind of within the, that I see again and again and again within Lacanian psychoanalytic theory. So I see this most readily available in Mari Rudy's work, but also as I study other thinkers in this, these are a lot of the kind of core concepts and movement between the concepts that I see repeated, whether I'm reading Todd McGowan or now I'm actually taking a course on Slavoj Žižek and For They Know Not What They Do. And actually the guy who is teaching that course, at some point I'd like to reach out to him and his partner in Theory Underground. So Dave and Mikey's teaching the course. I'd like to reach out to both of them and just interview them and go over some of this stuff and introduce you guys to what they're up to. One of these days I'll do that. But so what I'd like to do, though, is just share my current understanding of what I see arising as I read, say, Mari Rudy's work. So it goes something like this, and I've written this down on a piece of paper. So the four kind of main movements that I see, it starts with fall, and then imagine an arrow, then lack, then an arrow, then call, and then an arrow, and then struggle for fidelity to the call. Okay, so then under each of these categories is all sorts of other things. So under fall, we've got things like the mirror stage and everything that that implies. That brings in a way to talk about Lacan's concept. I mean, mirror stage is sort of his mythology of how a infant comes into language, and in order to understand all that, we have to begin to wrestle with these different ideas, these different categories that he splits into the imaginary, the symbolic, and the real. And we can go, I'm going to just give a brief overview of all of this stuff that I've written down here on this paper, and then maybe I'll come back and try to go deeper into each of these areas. Okay, so under fall, we've got mirror stage. That means that you're going to have to understand the imaginary, the symbolic, and the real. It also, under this sort of umbrella, you're going to hear things about like the no of the father, the cut or symbolic castration, and the loss of jouissance. Okay, so we fall into subjectivity through this no, this, as we're growing up, here's what's acceptable in this family and here's what's not acceptable. Here's what it means to be a last name of the the family. So I was just talking with a friend this morning, and he was talking about like how, you know, he's starting to teach his young child, like, now it's time for bed, and now it's time for reading, or now it's time, even at a young stage. I think that's what he said. And so that's partly what it means to be a part of that society. Like, as we become socialized humans, we have to give up our unfettered jouissance. Okay, so that's what's all I would categorize under the fall. And then from that fall, this pushes us into this concept of lack. And that lack, I think that Mari does the best job of this that I see. She always, in each of her books, always emphasizes this. And the first podcast episode that I did in sort of this resurgence of the podcast, it's called Two Kinds of Lack. This is what that whole episode was about. That she always emphasizes constitutive lack and contingent lack. Again, constitutive means that it's inherent, it's necessary. You can't get rid of it without destroying the whole thing. So, it's like a foundational block that if you get rid of that block, that structure no longer exists. So this, if by constitutive lack, maybe another word we could kind of, the way that you could think of it is sort of this ennui, this restlessness, this, like the song by Bruce Springsteen, Everybody's Got a Hungry Heart. It's that kind of a thing. We're always, because we all have a hungry heart, we're always reaching out toward the world, trying to, find objects, people, experiences, commodities, things that will bring us satisfaction. This is a lot of what I think, St. Augustine is talking about too in his work. So the restlessness of the heart. All of that is, in psychoanalytic terms, in at least Mari and I think also Todd McGowan, is thought of as constitutive lack. But then you also have contingent lack. And this is the kind of stuff that is, the different traumas that happen to us. If we get in a car wreck, okay, we might have to deal with that, with the repercussions of that car wreck. And that's idiosyncratic. That's particular to your lived experience. But then there's also things that are contingent, like even just you're thrown into your body. You're thrown when you come into the world. It's not as though you chose to be male or female. It's not as though you chose the color of your skin. And you didn't choose the class that you were born into. But so the society, and also you didn't choose like the way that the society around you responds to all of those things. So that's another form of what we could call lack, precariousness that like we're going to have to tarry with throughout the course of our lives. Okay. But, and then from lack, that takes us into call. And what I want to say is that though that lack might be extremely painful and hurtful, and just like just annoying, you know, just the like, man, why do I feel so tired? Why do I feel so empty inside? Why do I feel so hollow? Though that lack is painful, it also is potentially the site where we can have the capacity to experience something like a call, something like a summons. And this is where language about like the echo of Da Sting, and Da Sting is, it's something from Lacan. Da Sting, as far as I understand, is like the thing, the unfettered jouissance that we never actually had as an infant, but once we fall into the symbolic order, we retroactively feel as though we have been separated or cut, castrated from that unfettered jouissance. That's what we're talking about when we talk about Das Ding, the thing. And that's why you sometimes experience these moments where we stumble across something and we think, oh, that's it. That's the thing. And that's like what Coca-Cola is trying to do. You know, our society around us, advertising, is always trying to convince you that they have this certain something that will fill the lack at the core of your being, that it will become your, they want it to become your thing. Like I just saw a commercial for golf and it just in big bold letters said, make golf your thing. And it's actually funny thinking of golf and the idea of repetition compulsion. Repetition compulsion is where we keep going back to the same script, the same thing where we it's like we just kind of keep, maybe we change out partners or whatever, but we keep repeating the same kind of forms of something that we that seems like destructive, that we wish that we could get out of. That's repetition compulsion. We keep going out with the same kinds of people that always like hurt us, or we keep hurting other people, or anything like that. Or we keep overeating on pizza, or we keep overdrinking, or we keep just doing things that are destructive to us, but that for some reason we can't seem to wrench ourselves out of doing those things. And that's, we can get into more of that here in a second. But potentially the way out of, or maybe the, I don't know if it's really a way out, but a potentially healthier way to deal with that tendency to repeat is to find, to make space to sit in the lack and to try to listen for and hear and heed the call of something that probably isn't coming from society. It's like we sit and we listen, and it's lately I've been finding it as I settle back into like rediscovering things that I loved in my youth. Things like Tenacious D, things like comedy, and there's something actually there was something like kind of good in and of itself in those things, I think, anyways, now that I perceived with kind of an innocent heart as a child. And now I'm coming back to that and going, I knew it. There was something in that. Okay. So, under the call, we have, under the category of the call, in my little kind of writing, the call is the third kind of main heading that I have here. I also have, the specificity of desire. And that will link up here with the ethics of psychoanalysis. And this kind of sits in between. So the call and the struggle for the fidelity of the call. Struggle for the fidelity of the call is for fidelity to the call is the that's my fourth category. And basically that is this struggle to not give ground on that which one has been summoned to. And so perhaps there's something in things like comedy, in things like philosophy and thinking critically that I was drawn to even as a child. There's definitely like some kind of theatrical side to me. I did a lot of like acting in high school, and I've kind of let that go over the last couple of years. There's something about me that really comes alive when I get to stand up in front of other people and perform in some way. That's partly why I do this podcast. So, I feel summoned in some way to that way of being in the world, I guess is what I'm saying. And that is that's a struggle to remain faithful to that in a world where, like, when I get this sort of anxious energy, like, oh my God, I've got to do something. It's a lot easier to just go turn on Netflix or just indulge in some other kind of carnal thing that, I can just overdrink and then pass out and then I'm on to my next day or whatever. I always use that as an example. It's not like and it probably sounds like I'm a total alcoholic, which I don't know, whatever. I just use that as an example because it's kind of an easy one. Overeating pizza is definitely where I get jouissance. So in the struggle for fidelity to the call, I've got under that things like jouissance, the death drive, and then a little something called sublimation. And that is what I really like. Sublimation, as far as I understand, is where you are able to sit in that anxiety and hear and heed and direct that anxious energy towards something that only you can do in the way, in the sort of idiosyncratic position that you have in this life. And so that's what being an artist is kind of about. Nobody can paint what I'm going to paint. It's like nobody can be the mother to the daughter that you have. Nobody can be the brother to the sibling that you have. And so like we all have these unique positions. Like if I don't call Ramona, then who is my grandma, then like only I can be the one who has like certain conversations with her. Okay, I'm kind of getting off topic there a little bit. But under the struggle for fidelity to the call, I would put like, this is where we can start to talk about neoliberalism and neoliberal society. And what do we mean by that? What is that? And in some ways, I would say that it's that which is all around us that's constantly competing for our time, energy, attention. It always promises to have the thing that will fill in your lack. But it never can in the way that faithfulness to the call of dusting, I guess maybe was how you could say it, or the summons of love, or the what else? The certain something that just seems to call out to us about certain things in the world. And when you pursue those things, you come alive. Whatever that is, that's like what you've got to do. And the more you can kind of start to just, you're probably kind of doing that, moving towards that thing anyways. It's just that you're fighting yourself along the way. And the sooner you can kind of co-sign what you're on, the way I sometimes say it is, the sooner you can co-sign the check your unconscious wrote a long time ago, the sooner you can kind of be freed from all of the voices in our world that's constantly pressuring us to be like everyone else. Okay. Well, I think that's all. Thanks everybody for listening, and hope you're doing well. And we'll talk to you later.